Hello, welcome to the program. I'm David Cruz. Wonderful to have you here because this is the culminating episode of a three-part series of our show, which has been looking at the 50th anniversary celebration of the LULAC National Education Service Centers, known around the country as LNESC, and with us a very special guest. He is an icon in the Latino community across our country, a dear friend of LNESC, and certainly one of the stakeholders in this organization, Mr. Rudy Becerra. Thank you very much, Rudy, for being here.
No, thank you, David. Looking forward to this discussion.
Your roots are steeped very deeply in the history of LNESC. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I've been a long supporter and LULACer all my life. In fact, if it weren't for LULAC, I wouldn't have ended up in some of the career positions and opportunities that I was fortunate and blessed to accomplish. Because just like anything else, when you have mentors and people that believe in you and support you, you know, together you can move mountains. But my initial involvement with LNESC actually happened with LULAC, because growing up in New Mexico, LULAC and SER and the American GI Forum, a lot of these entities were the go-to organizations for Latinos, not only in the private sector, but NGOs, business community. These were the organizations we went to because our community needed support in so many ways. I initially got involved with LULAC through my father. My father was a laborer by trade. He started in construction, ultimately owned his own construction company. But he not only focused in hiring Latinos, you know, in his industry, but he saw the abuse, I hate to say it, but and lack of opportunities for Latinos, especially in the neighborhood that we grew up in. It's called South Barelas in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And my father and a few other people, Licho Martinez and the Sanchez, you know, Mr. Manuel Sanchez and others in the Lujans, you know, they saw that we needed some help. We needed to do something. So at that time, it was a newly elected senator. His name was Senator Pete Domenici. He and my father and a few other of these politicians go back many years. And in fact, my father and the senator grew up together. They went to Catholic school together and they played semi-pro baseball together. Senator Domenici was a pitcher. My father was a catcher. So early on, I remember as a kid, you know, putting bumper stickers in vehicles, promoting Pete Domenici for city council. He lost. Mayor, he lost. And ultimately ran for Senate, and he won. And the rest is history, because he not only became an icon in New Mexico, but he did so much for our community. And I'll get to specifically what he did for us through LNESC, right, and how he supported LNESC. But early on, because of my father's involvement in the community, he became the director of Model Cities. And Model Cities was a government program to help neighborhoods relocate, especially if it was in areas that were not conducive to a lot of the necessities, you know, city connections, water, sewer, et cetera, et cetera. And in South Barelas, you know, there's still a lot of these homes that were not part of the city or not connected in the infrastructure. And my father saw that was a big disappointment and big disadvantage to our people, you know, to our community, to El Barrio. And my dad and a group of people did something about it. They actually went to Washington, D.C., got involved in the Model Cities program and changed the whole neighborhood. And if you look at South Barelas right now, I look at it like the phoenix that rose from the ground. You have the National Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's South Barelas. That's where I grew up. You know, you have industry there now, and you have a thriving community and thriving business. But my father and a group of leaders and very powerful Latinas, you know, Grace Olivares is one of them, who ultimately ended up in Washington. But powerful people were creating change and we're working together to do right, you know, to do what's right for especially in the Latino community. And when I saw his involvement, one of the first organizations I personally got involved with is LULAC. The LULAC state program had a lot of programs supporting Latinos. One of them that I got involved in was LNESC, LULAC National Educational Service Centers. You know, they were providing opportunities for young people to pursue post-secondary opportunity and finding grants, Pell Grants, student loans, or whatever it would take to basically educate our community that, you know what, college is a good choice. You know, you do have the potential. You do have the opportunity. We know it's going to cost money. And let us help you find those resources to help you get to whatever you want to accomplish, right? So I was very impressed when I saw the LNESC program, to the point where I started getting involved with that, ultimately becoming a counselor at the Albuquerque LNESC Center. At that time, the person that ran it was an individual by the name of Pete Vigil. Pete Vigil is from New Mexico. He did a phenomenal job in New Mexico. He was promoting LULAC, National Educational Service Center, not only in Albuquerque, but statewide. And then a fortunate thing happened. We got a Latino elected for governor, Jerry Apodaca. Well, when Jerry Apodaca was elected for governor, he surrounded himself with pretty good talent. And Pete Vigil was called by the governor to go to the Expo New Mexico, or the New Mexico State Fair, and run that whole enterprise. So when he did that, and I was an educational service center counselor at the time, the opportunity to direct the center came about. And because of my involvement with LULAC, the state organization, you know, we had some great leaders, some great individuals that were leading the charge. And I hate to start mentioning names because I'm sure I'll forget somebody, but we had great leadership, not only for LULAC, Operation SER, the American GI Forum. I got to meet all these great leaders. And when the opportunity came to direct the center, I threw my name in because they asked me to. And lo and behold, I got the job, which to me was a blessing because, you know, we had seen some grids that were shown where they showed that for every 100 Latinos enrolled in kindergarten, they tracked them. I think this was Rand Institute, tracked Latino students. And out of the 100 students that were in kindergarten together, less than 7 or 8 survived that whole process from kindergarten to elementary school to middle school to junior high to high school. And the reality was a travesty. You know, we were not graduating Latinos at the rate we should. I think out of the 100 Latino students that they tracked, and this is a Rand Institute study way back then in the early 70s, less than 7 or 8 were making it to post-secondary opportunities. And LNESC was the lightning rod. You know, it was a jet fuel that we needed because it provided opportunities for our young people to pursue a college degree or community college or vocational school. And we started making a great impact, right? Well, lo and behold, about 2 years into me running the educational service centers, we get a call that we're going to lose our funding. So ultimately, at that time, you know, Senator Pete Domenici, the Southern senator from Georgia, and of all places me to end up here in Georgia, his name is Senator Pete Nunn. I mean, Senator Sam Nunn and Senator Pete Domenici were both on the Finance Committee. And, you know, they basically were defunding certain programs. And one of them was CSA, Community Services Administration, that a woman by the name of Graciela Olivares used to run. And basically, she made the decision that they were no longer going to fund the LULAC National Educational Service Centers. Well, lo and behold, you know, when we found out that our senior senator was, you know, basically heading the committee on finance and government, I mean, one of the most powerful committees in the Senate, the individual who's running our state LULAC National Educational Service Centers, I forget the gentleman's name because we had so many great leaders. They called me out of the blue and said, Rudy, do you have access to Senator Pete Domenici? Well, one of the first questions I had for myself was, let me call my father right away. So I called my father and I said, Dad, can you make a call for the center? I think they want us to go to Washington to meet with them because we just got defunded. And my dad made the phone call. And sure enough, I think that was in 1976, actually hopped in a plane. And that was my first actual plane ride, if you can imagine. Now I'm a 3 million miler, right? But so this is 1976, basically defunded. We had, you know, we saw the writing on the wall. If we didn't secure funding from some sector, we were going to be out of business. So sure enough, my father set up the appointment. I showed up with two or three individuals. In fact, one of those individuals was a person by the name of Marty Chavez, who was going, I think, to Catholic University. No, I'm sorry. He was going to Georgetown University Law School. And ultimately, Marty became mayor of Albuquerque. And Marty Chavez is a great individual, great politician, and a great friend. And that was the only person I really recognized and knew when I went up to Washington. So lo and behold, we go to Senator Pete Domenici's office. And it was a couple individuals who were running the LNESC centers. I think Marty was in that meeting, myself. The senator sits us down and he tells us, he goes, so you guys are from LULAC, right? And they all say yes. And goes, well, you know, Rudy and his father and I go back many years, and I'm happy Rudy's involved in this great program. But I want you guys to look at a plaque behind my desk. It's from you guys.
Wow.
And we looked at the plaque and he goes, the reason I have it there is you spelled my name wrong. So he basically pointed out the fact that, you know, we sent him a plaque with the wrong spelling of his last name. We, you know, we're red faced, so you can well imagine. You know, I think one of the comments was, sorry, Senator, you know, we'll correct that. He goes, no, you're not going to correct it. I have it there for a reason. Because at that time, he was also putting together a law to put in the New Mexico license plate, USA. Because in the federal government, through Social Security, through a lot of federal programs, when people said New Mexico, they thought it was Mexico. So Senator Pete Domenici actually created a law where we had in our license plate, New Mexico, USA. And it stands to this day, right? So here he is, you know, he really didn't have any paper in front of him. He asks one of his aides, give me that napkin. He writes down a napkin, you know, on the napkin. He goes, forgot who his chief of staff was. He goes, I want you to call these people here in town that I want them to talk to these people here from LULAC National Educational Service Centers. And basically what he jotted down was Department of Education, Talent Search Project. So because of Senator Pete Domenici, he directed us to Department of Education, Talent Search, and David, we're funded through them to this day. And it took a senior senator from New Mexico, Pete Domenici, and the relationship he had with my father and myself to open that door and to continue this great legacy of this great organization. That's just one of the stories. There's many, many more. But to put all that in perspective, I was honored to become a state director of LNESC. We're originally in the Northeast Heights, which was not conducive to being near the Latino community, even though Latinos were in all sectors of the city. But we, you know, when I was the director, I moved them downtown. We're right there in the building where we moved is actually still stands today, but it's right across the street from the convention center. And we're probably one of the most visited centers throughout the country. I think at that time we had 16 or 17 LNAC centers around the country. But the Albuquerque's LNESC office really had a lot of traction, a lot of foot traction, to where we opened up a satellite office in Las Cruces and other parts of New Mexico. But that was one of the most rewarding experiences in my life, because to this day, I still have people coming up to me and saying, you know, Rudy, if it weren't for that grant or that scholarship or that support that you directed me to apply for, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now. So to me, it's just been a blessing to be involved with LULAC. They've made me the person I am today because they're helping us in all sectors. I mean, LULAC was created because Latinos didn't have preschool, you know, and it started from there, but we've had some incredible leadership. It's nice to see that LNAC today still continues. And if it weren't for LULAC, I wouldn't be here today. So I'm proud to be a LULACer for life.
We will be back with more of our conversation on this 50th anniversary retrospective and continue to speak with Rudy M. Becerra right after this.
The 50th anniversary podcast series of LNESC is brought to you by Cheetos, helping students achieve their cheesy dreams. Tyson Foods, making great food, making a difference. ExxonMobil Foundation, empowering the next generation of Latino leaders in STEM. And the United States Coast Guard, protecting our shores and saving lives. LNESC, celebrating 50 years helping Latino youths achieve and succeed in higher education.
We continue our conversation now with Rudy M. Becerra, one of the key individuals in the 50-year history of LNESC. And I ask him about his name.
What does the M stand for?
Well, David, I was blessed to be named after my two grandfathers. On my mother's side, her father was named Rodolfo, but they couldn't spell it in school, so they shortened it to Rudy. And on my father's side, Maximiliano, they couldn't pronounce it, so they... So it was Max, but I'm a proud third generation Latino who was named after his two grandfathers who were trailblazers in their own right. Maximiliano on my father's side had a grocery store there on South 2nd and Bridge during the Great Depression. So he provided to communities when people didn't have any money, but he sure had a lot of IOUs in his attic, but he never suffered from anything. He actually had a private chauffeur, a translator, and was very politically connected, where he became a precinct chairman. And people said, if your grandfather, Maximiliano, would have spoke English, he would have been the mayor of Albuquerque. On my grandfather's side, he was a barber, and he opened up 6 or 7 barbershops there in South Albuquerque. But his history was, you know, he's from Zacatecas, Mexico. And he was actually the barber of Pancho Villa. And when he saw General Pershing going around in circles in Pancho Villa in the hills of Zacatecas, laughing, drinking tequila, but seeing that the United States sent a general to go kill him, my grandfather made the decision to move up north with his 4 kids or 5 kids that were under the age of 6. And he ended up in Albuquerque and he opened a barbershop. So these two individuals have incredible history. I come from a great lineage of great leaders that provided for communities.
Rodolfo Maximiliano Becerra, known to so many of us over decades as Rudy M. Becerra. And I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge, as we celebrate this 50th anniversary program interview, Mr. Becerra's long history. He's too modest to tell us, but he began his career more than 25 years previously when he served as Coca-Cola Senior VP for Latin Affairs. He had also been Special Assistant to President Ronald Reagan on Latino and Small Business Affairs. As he pointed out, he is a native of Albuquerque, graduate of the University of New Mexico. From his modest roots, he certainly has become every much respected leader for the Latino community across the nation. And the thing that, Rudy, always comes to mind when I hear your name is how often you have been a gateway for people. We speak of you in the context of the LNESC story, one of its founding directors as an organization, but also you never forgot where you came from. Tell me how your experience at LNESC carried forth with you to continue to be that gateway to so many of us.
Well, David, I, first of all, you're too kind. You know, you're giving me much too much credit. I'm humbled just to be able to say that I've been blessed by so many people that have always believed in me, that gave me an opportunity, that pushed me, that corrected me, that told me the do's and the don'ts. You mentioned the two great opportunities I had. Again, I keep mentioning Senator Pete Domenici, but when I was in Washington, he's the one that basically opened that door for me to go work in the Reagan White House. And I remember that when I went to his office to go thank him, and he looked at me straight in the eye, and he said, "Rudy, I'm going to give you two pieces of advice." He goes, "First of all, you're there to work for the President of the United States. That's all you're focused on. Make sure you focus on his agenda and whatever priorities he's bestowed on you. Don't take any money from anybody. Don't help anybody with phone calls that you can't deliver on. And you start looking for another job." And when I hadn't even started the White House, right? So I thought about it. But when he said basically start looking for another job, he talked about networking, right? And that's how I met the CEO of Coca-Cola. You know, in 1986, we had the first ever White House conference on small business. And one of my jobs was to invite people to come and speak. And I read that there was a Latino working at Coca-Cola, just became CEO, Cuban-American. And lo and behold, I called the Coca-Cola company and I said, "This is Rudy Becerra. I'd like to speak to Roberto Goizueta." And they abruptly hang up on me. So 30 minutes later, I called him back and I said, "I know you think this is a crank call, but if you can help have Mr. Goizueta give me a call, this is important." Sure enough, 45 minutes later, he calls me, starts speaking to me in Spanish. I start speaking to him in Spanish. He starts asking me about my family. Lo and behold, we start a friendship. And sure enough, he comes to Washington. Remember, this was before Sarbanes-Oxley, where phone calls could get things accomplished, right? So we had 1,500 small businessmen and women from all over the country. They came in for a week. Everything was provided. Goizueta was one of the luncheon speakers. And when he came to talk, you know, he starts talking about globalization. And David, you just seemed to look at my face. You know, I thought, my God, he's talking way over their heads. But you know what? Then he starts to preface, "But ladies and gentlemen, Coca-Cola started off as a small business. And let me show you how we got to where we got." David, he got three standing ovations.
Wow.
And, you know, after that week, 72 laws were passed to help small business today. Those kinds of things that, you know, we did it. Right around that time, we also passed amnesty. I don't know if you know, remember, 1980.
Yes, I remember.
You know, Reagan basically said, "Look, you know, immigrants are a blessing to this country. We got to support them. We got to let them have access to the American dream. But from today on forward, we need to secure our borders." Well, nobody listened. And you can see where we're dealing with now. But he believed that immigrants were a blessing to this country. He believed that small business was a backbone of this country. And, you know, I've just been blessed. But what I got from LNESC, from LULAC, the leadership that ran these organizations was the pride of being Latino. And let me give you one story. You know, working for Roberto Goizueta, who was a business icon, we were going to New York City to the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. They had a big convention. At that time, it was Jose Nino was the CEO. And Goizueta was going to be the luncheon speaker, but before the luncheon, the night before, we went to a reception in Wall Street, and you know, Warren Buffett and the big hedge fund owners and big owners of big businesses were there, and it was at the Waldorf Astoria, and Goizueta asked me if I wanted to come with him. So sure enough, we come to the Waldorf Astoria, and we come to this beautiful room, and the doors open. And when we walked in with Goizueta, it was his old Mick Jagger walk in, because all these people just congregated, you know, and surrounded him with so much respect. And David, it made me so proud to be a Latino, because these people were seeing what true leadership was all about. Under Goizueta's stewardship, the company stock went up 1,800%. Wow. Company stock split 4 times. This guy was a genius in business, right? And he didn't let these young people that usually were the analysts tell us how to run our business, and people respected that. But it really made me feel proud, because, you know, we as Latinos, we can do it.
Rudy, was it, I cannot even imagine being in that setting. And I will ask you, coming from you, you know, as you pointed out, South Morales in New Mexico and your LNESC days, there you are standing in the middle of that room. Did you ever feel like, hey, I don't belong here? You know, they call that the imposter syndrome. Did you ever doubt that you belonged where you were, standing along that giant of corporate America? And it truly, I mean, not just corporate America, but of America. Did you ever pinch yourself? Because, you know, some of us grapple with that. And I wonder, I want people in the LNESC family to hear, how did you handle that kind of fama and being around that kind of power?
Well, I'll be honest with you, David. I learned what true leadership was like through the people that I try to emulate, right? I try to emulate my father. I try to emulate my older brother. I try to emulate Licho Martinez. I try to emulate Governor Jerry Apodaca. I try to emulate Governor Richardson. I try to emulate, they did so many great things, right? I try to emulate the founders of LULAC. I try to emulate the founders of SER, the founders of the American GI Forum, the people I was able to interact with. I just would listen to their stories, and I would ask them questions, and I would ask them how and why and how can I get there, right? And sure enough, you know, they gave me advice and counsel. And, you know, I'm David, for a fact that even in today's society, we as Latinos have to operate twice as good to be recognized. And I think, you know, the reason that happens is because they're not used to us being at that level, right? I mean, up until Goizueta, how many Latina CEOs did we have in major 50 or 100 corporations? Very few. You know, I talked about the grid that the RAND Institute did way back when in the 70s about Latino education. David, it's a travesty because we're still there. We had more Latino graduates in the 70s than we have today. What's going on? Somehow we got to get the message out that, you know what, si se puede, we can get there. And we got to show them examples of how we got there. And we have to tell, you know, we got to be the historians. We got to show them that, you know, we had the Goizuetas, we had the Dominicis, we had the Sam Nuns, we have the, you know, Grace Olivares's, we have, you know, the Gloria Molinas, you know, we have great people out there, you know, that have paved the way for us. You know, let's continue that, you know, let's be that conduit. You know, let's not disconnect. And we have to continue that momentum. And I think what we as leaders, you know, or perceived leaders, because I always say there's a lot of self-anointed Latina leaders, but the reality is that, you know, you and I, David, know who the true leaders are. It's usually those people that really don't say much, and they're the doers. They're the ones that can fill a room with 1,000 people, but no one knows how they got there, right?
Right.
Those are the kind of people I want to surround myself with. You know, I've been blessed to know what leadership looks like. And when I identify it, I try to embrace it. When I see a young Latino or Latino that I know has incredible potential and incredible talent, we try to embrace it. In fact, here recently, here in Atlanta, we started an organization called Palante, and it's a Latino PAC to promote Latino candidates here in the state of Georgia. We endorsed five candidates, David. Four of them won. And these are young people that have never even envisioned running for political office. But I remember the chief of staff for Senator Pete Domenici, his name was Lou Gallegos, brilliant, brilliant. And I was asking him one day, you know, at one of our watering holes in Washington, I said, Lou, what's the key? And he goes, Becerra, Rudy, candidates, candidates, candidates. And David, we need more Latino candidates. We need more Latinos in every sector, especially Latinas. But you know what? A good friend of mine, Dr. David Lopez, who's now interim chair of Columbia School of Media and Film, he told me, you know, Rudy, there's also something happening with Latino males. They're dropping at the wayside. And I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, they're not pursuing their education. They're not doing things that they're capable of doing. We need to focus on that. So I think, David, what our next mission is really to work on the Latino male. Because I hear that Latinos are just busting it, you know. There are rock stars right now. But we can't negate the fact that our males need some help.
I'll continue my 50th anniversary celebration of LNESC, a conversation with Rudy M. Becerra, right after this.
The 50th anniversary podcast series of LNESC is brought to you by Cheetos, helping students achieve their cheesy dreams. Tyson Foods, making great food, making a difference. ExxonMobil Foundation, empowering the next generation of Latino leaders in STEM. And the United States Coast Guard, protecting our shores and saving lives. LNESC, celebrating 50 years helping Latino youth achieve and succeed in higher education.
We return now to our 50th anniversary celebration interview with our guest, Rudy M. Becerra.
You have managed to navigate both sides of that aisle in Washington. You have worked with all corners of our political society. You've melded into all areas. What do you tell our young people and others who may be tuned into this program, wherever they are, about the need to be able to work with everyone? And is that possible even today in our society as polarized as we are? Big question, what do you think?
You know what, David, I think it takes leadership. And you know, I was blessed to be in Washington at a time when you had two Irish guys. You had Ronald Reagan, you had Tip O'Neill. One is the POTUS, you know, President of the United States. The other one is Speaker of the House. Republican, Democrat, agreed to disagree, but there was civility. They respected each other, right? And they actually got things done. And I think what we need is we need leadership. We need people to say, you know what, no mas. You know, why are we so polarized? Why do we have to choose sides? You know? We got to open up the dialogue. And right now that dialogue's not open. You know, Republicans, Democrats, they don't even speak to each other. That shouldn't be happening. I think we got to go back to the basics where people start respecting each other. We're civil again. You know, I still remember, you know, in 86 when Reagan said no Republican would speak ill of another Republican. it's comical right now what happens, what's happening right now, right? So this was way back then, right? I mean, what we're seeing now in society is just ridiculous, you know? We need to go back to the basics. We need to focus on things that work. Reading, writing, arithmetic, civics. How many young people have never had a civics class, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was at Coca-Cola, I was shocked when, you know, we would go around the country because, you know, people really identified Coca-Cola as a culprit and everything ill with American health, right? I mean, they blamed us for obesity. They blamed us for diabetes. They blamed us. People actually were telling me that we're killing kids, right? And I actually had a woman, and I was on a plane ride, and she said, "You work for Coca-Cola?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Well, you know, you're killing kids." I said, "Miss, we're saving lives." Because I pointed to her that in some third world countries, our Coca-Cola was the only safe drinking water because it's 99% water. So what I meant by that is that we got to be civil with each other, you know, and when people started saying Coca-Cola is a culprit, that, you know, they're bad, we had to educate them, right? We used to go to college campuses because, you know, these young people were thinking things that were not true, you know, so we had to actually go to college campuses and educate these young people saying, look, these are the things that we do at Coca-Cola, you know, we create aquifers in India, you know, we're providing safe drinking water in the Navajo Nation. Can you imagine our own country? They didn't even have safe drinking water. We came out with a system to purify mud water, sewer water, and we're installing safe drinking water in the Navajo Nation. You know, I would start telling people the great things that we as a company were doing, and you know what? They would change their mindset. And I think that's what needs to be done. We got to educate each other as to the great things that we can do together, right? And I think we got to go back to that. When I say we got to go back to the basics, it's about respect. You know, I think it's a travesty the way we're treating our older people, you know, our senior citizens, you know, our grandparents, you know, our forefathers would be turning the graves to see that there's no respect for your elders anymore. You know, I remember, again, you know, when I was at Coca-Cola and we'd go around the country and all these people blaming us for all this stuff. And then we'd ask one simple question. Is there physical education in the schools? And they say, no, you know, there's only one state that had mandatory physical education. That was Indiana. No other state had physical education. David, you remember in school, we had mandatory physical education.
Mandatory. Correct.
That's where we used to all come up with these crazy excuses to not to put on our running shorts and our tennis shoes and go out there in the rain and the snow or whatever. But you know what? We did, you know. I remember, you know, we all wanted President Kennedy's medal. Remember, we could run the mile under a certain time.
Yes.
And we'd all walk proudly because we got that medal.
Wow.
You know, going back to the basics, man. You know, we got to, we just have to go back to the basics.
Well, you know, and that's much of the mission of LNESC because we say it's about connecting young people to higher learning and to also ensure that they succeed. So it's not just getting them there, is making sure that they succeed in the process. How can we make that happen better, Rudy? How can we prepare our young people, and some who may even go into higher learning later in life, so that they do succeed? What do you think? Now that you've had this trajectory of your career, what do you think we could do to better prepare the LNESC experience for our young people, or them for the LNESC experience?
I think we have to bring them into the forefront. In order to, you know, we need to get them in internships and fellowships, you know, and civil service and diplomatic service. If we see some potential, run them for the school board, run them for the city council, running for mayor, running for, you know, help. I think it was Tip O'Neill that said, you know, all politics is local. It sure is.
Yes.
You know, that's how LULAC got their jet fuel, man. I mean, we started running people for office, and, you know, I mean, I look at the California model, right? I don't know if you remember, David, remember Proposition 187?
Of course, of course.
And I think the best story was from current Senator Padilla, right?
Yes, Alex.
Somebody was interviewing him, and he really told the story. He goes, you know, we as young people grew up where our parents were fighting Proposition 187. And he said it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun being Latino at that time. Immigrants, you know, they're bashing Latinos, they're bashing immigrants. And we realized that the best way to change is to get involved within the system that's creating this change. So they started getting themselves elected to city council. You know, if you look at the trajectory of Senator Padilla in California, you know, he was a city councilman, you know, did a lot there. Then he, you know, he just kept pursuing political office. Then he became, I think the insurance, his star just kept rising, right? Now he's a U.S. Senator. But when he's telling the story of these young kids that were children of these parents that were fighting 187 are now the Latino caucus. And in California, nothing, nada gets done without going through Latino caucus. These are those kids. These are those kids we're creating. We got to control the dialogue, David. And the way to control the dialogue is to be in power at all levels.
Rudy, as we round third going home, let me ask you to look ahead. You've seen 50 years of LNESC. Where do we go from here?
I'll be honest with you, David, and I don't know why we haven't figured this model out. And you know, I was hoping I never have to have this dialogue, but we need Latino serving institutions that are really targeted to Latino and Latinas. We used to have the Hispanic University in San Jose. It was, again, a beacon of life, the Venus that rose from the ground.
Yes.
I mentioned Dr. David Lopez. He was the president of Latino University that Dr. Cruz created there in San Jose. It was a beautiful college. It was a beautiful institution. It didn't last because, you know what? We could never convince our community to invest, right? And I think the key, David, is we need to convince our community to invest in each other. We know how to give, you know, we give to the Catholic Church, we give to causes. We're a very giving community, we're very giving people. But sometimes we don't give when we need to, right? When the Hispanic University needed some financial support, it wasn't Latinos that were supporting it, it was an Italiano. The Italian community was supporting it. And they couldn't have all that burden on their back. You know, or as Tip O'Neill once said, if you're going to run for political office, if your own family doesn't vote for you, don't run. We need to start investing in our own community, David. We need to invest in our community, invest in Latino institutions, create, support them, make them sustainable, invest in Latino businesses, invest in everything Latino-centric. But we have to help ourselves. And we have that kind of wealth, David. I mean, there's some Latinos here in the state of Georgia that I saw grow from one business to 30 businesses, from a $1 billion enterprise to a $22 billion enterprise. And these are Latino and Latinas that nobody knows about. A Latina that owns a steel company here in Georgia. You know, we have a Latino that's probably the most successful dealership, auto dealership in the whole country. We have a Latino that has TV and radio stations and probably one of the biggest owners of Latino media in the country. We had a Latino here in Georgia whose steakhouse was in the Zagat list of the best steakhouse in the country for 2 years in a row. We've got all this, David. We just need to support it. I was in Washington, D.C., and Stephanie Valencia used to work with Obama in the White House. And I'm there. And Stephanie invited myself, and it was this Latino Hispanic Heritage Award or event in the White House with President Obama. And Stephanie's mother comes to me, and she goes, "Rudy, do you remember me?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know. You know how we get when people come."
Exactly.
Right. And I said, "You look for me." She goes, "Rudy, you gave me my first scholarship when you were at the LNESC.
Wow.
And because of you, my daughter's here
Ooh.
In the White House. And now Stephanie Valencia is part of that group that bought all of Univision. Brother, what? LNAC opens doors. Abrazo, hermano.
Thank you, Rudy M. Becerra. Again, we're so grateful to you for the work that you've done on behalf of LNESC and all the contributions you make to our community. Still ahead, we interview some of the young people we met at the Washington, D.C. celebration in honor of a half century of the LULAC National Education Service Centers coming up next.
The 50th Anniversary Podcast Series of LNESC is brought to you by Cheetos, helping students achieve their cheesy dreams. Tyson Foods, making great food, making a difference. ExxonMobil Foundation, empowering the next generation of Latino leaders in STEM. And the United States Coast Guard, protecting our shores and saving lives. LNESC. Celebrating 50 years helping Latino youths achieve and succeed in higher education.
Welcome back. I'm David Cruz. We go now to Washington, D.C. in honor of a half century of the LULAC National Education Service Centers. Hear now some of the young people and what they think about what they're experiencing.
My name is Gabriel Alejandro Vallansante.
And tell me where you're from.
I am from San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Beautiful, beautiful. Welcome to Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Okay. What is your name?
Hi, my name is Kimberly Martinez, and I am from Seguin, Texas.
Seguin, I love that town. And you?
My name is Bobby Navarro, and I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Well, you're here because we've been marking the 50th anniversary of this great organization. For half a century, young people have been helped through LNESC. What has it been like for you being in Washington, seeing all these things that you've witnessed?
It's been an amazing experience overall. When I first arrived here, I was sitting all alone. But then once we started like the official program, we were sitting at our tables and everyone was so welcoming. I also felt like really comfortable with who I am. I got to speak freely on who I am, what my culture is, and I didn't feel like neglected at some point as I thought I would be, just because everyone over here is from the States. They've lived here for like most of their lives, and I'm the only one from Puerto Rico that's technically not from the States. And since our cultures are like really different, most people over here are from Mexico. And I also got into experience a lot of variety on what different cultures are, their accents, which are really interesting. And everything has been really nice. People over here have treated me really nice. They've asked me where I'm from, and I'm proud to say that I'm from Puerto Rico. And they greatly, they accept me with a lot of great manners. Some of them also talk to me about that they have visited my island, and that fills me up with pride, and I'm proud to say that I'm Puerto Rican, so I'm really happy that I'm here.
Of all of us at this table, he's the only guy who's got an island.
Sadly.
Yeah, basically we're colonized, but yeah.
No, you have a whole island. It's your island.
Yeah.
None of us, I don't have an island, you have an island.
Yeah.
You're a lucky guy, you know what I'm saying? What do you think you've learned most from being here this week?
Well, for the 2 days that I've been here, at the beginning, we were just getting to know each other. But then the second day, five members came over here and decided to talk on what... ¿Cómo se dice esta palabra?
¿Está bien en español?
No, it's not affirmative action. Era the one before.
¿O algo más?
I forgot what
we está bien, está bien. Cuando, cuando,
advocacy, yeah. They were talking about what advocacy was, and like, there's some terms that I don't know in English, because my main language is Spanish, and I didn't exactly know what it was, but those five persons that were here, they explained it to me really well, and I understood, and I like felt motivated to advocate now in my school for things that I see. I before didn't know the definition, but now that I was here, I got to understand it really well, and I've been motivated ever since. Also, I felt represented by a Peruvian lady that was here. Her name was Ivelis, and once I heard she was from Peru, my other side from my mom's family, I felt so much pride, and I actually went up to her at the end, and I thanked her for everything that she said. She was the one that most inspired me throughout the speech. And overall, in this program, there's a lot to learn, a lot to do, a lot of people to meet, and these resources help you. I also had like a lot of notes that I decided to take and which I should fill out my resume. There was a really kind lady that gave a speech, and I felt like I should have taken notes, and I did. And now I know how to improve my resume. So everything that's been said here is key for what my future is going to hold. So I'm really thankful and grateful for being here. So.
Y yo sé que vas a ser una persona, ya lo eres, vas a ser una persona muy exitosa.
Gracias.
Jovencita, dime de ti, tell me about Seguin. Tell me about your experience here with this group.
Seguin, Texas. It is a very small town in Texas. We are neighbors to Austin, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, and McQueenie, Texas. We are a very small community, but a very unified one. We take pride in ourselves and in all of our students. And just being here, being able to represent them, it has been the utmost honor. I love my community and I love my school, and it feels amazing that I was able to come here and represent them.
And listening to the stories of others who are here with you, what was that like? What has this been like for you?
Oh my gosh. Oh, this seminar just completely immersed me in an environment that just fostered so many leadership skills, civic responsibility. It helped me with my understanding of government workings, and it just introduced me to people that I'll hopefully keep in contact with even after I leave. It presented me with opportunities to work with like-minded peers and meet industry professionals, which I didn't think I'd be able to do. And this experience has just shaped my future career, and it has inspired me to just make the difference in my community that I know it needs.
When you walk around or fly into the city and you see the White House and you see Congress and you see all this history, how does that make you feel to see all these things as a Latina?
Oh my, I've gained so much knowledge here, and I know I'll be able to take these information and turn them into actions in my community. I've learned how to address local issues and take civil initiatives, and it has just empowered me. I feel so empowered, and I know I'm going to make an impact when I get back home.
Can you believe that 50 years ago, way before any of us were even thinking about this, there were young people just like you starting in this program? Imagine where they are today. They're all over this nation. What does it make you feel to know that you now are at the half-century mark of students who have been helped? Can you believe that? You're part of a powerful history. How does that make you feel as a young person?
I feel very honored, but I somewhat feel pressured because now I feel like I have a lot to live up to, and I just hope I live up to it. I really do. There's a lot of people that I met here that were in this program just like me, and they made so many differences, and I just hope I can do the same.
You will. I know you will. But let me come back to your name, please, once more.
My name is Bobby Navarro. I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
What's been for you the most significant feeling you've had?
Well, I think at first when I arrived here, I felt really almost insignificant in a way that I felt that I was not in the same realm as these people. Like, I felt that I was, my growing up being rough, you know, and just getting to be here and experience all this stuff really just is a humbling experience. And it's made me think about like my family, because I love my mom, I love my sister, I love my father, who was shot. And, like, to just know from where I come from and to be here representing my school and representing Albuquerque, you know, because I see when I go outside and I see homelessness and I see people hurting, and I have friends who have passed away, unfortunately, and I just see all that, and it makes me want to strive to do better. And just being amongst all these great people, it fills me with a fire to keep going and to keep pushing forward. And I think that I've been blessed to have many great mentors in my life who have pushed me in a direction to where I can overcome anything as long as I am able to keep my head down to the grindstone, you know? And I don't want to say lost, but I feel very found now. I feel very found, and I feel that no matter which way I go in life, I know I will have success because of the skills I've learned from here.
I want you to mention the names of your family. Your mama?
My mom is Monique Romero.
Your sister?
My sister is Angela Navarro.
Your dad?
And my dad is Bobby Navarro. And I love them. I want you to I'm glad that I could do this for you guys. And I'm glad that I can be here with these great people who I never in my life would have thought that I could compare to some of these kids, you know, because they're so great, and I'm meeting these people, and it's just great to feel like what Kimberly said, among them and one of them.
And you were.
Thank you, sir.
You were chosen.
Okay, so we had to move because we're in one part of the hotel, and the band is making noise over there, and they're going to start to clean up that area. So we moved into the lobby. That's why it's a little echoey. But I was asking you, ¿dónde vas a estar en 50 años? En medio siglo.
Bueno, en realidad, si estamos hablando de 50 años, yo diría que ya yo tendría mi vida hecha. Siento que con mi dedicación que yo quiera poner de mi parte y al yo saber lo que quiero cumplir, las metas que quiero lograr, con el pensamiento que tengo ahora mismo, en cómo siento que me estoy dirigiendo, yo estoy seguro de que voy a ya poder tener mi vida hecha, tener una familia, claro. Yo sé de lo que yo soy capaz y yo voy a completar y voy a cumplir mis metas como yo lo voy a hacer, y con orgullo lo voy a completar y voy a decir de que lo pude lograr.
Okay, same question as this young man.
Oh, goodness.
Picture yourself, and I know it's impossible to know. But if you had a path, where would you like to be in 50 years? Because this is the 50th of this organization. Where will you be in 50 years?
I just hope that in 50 years I can look back and say that I did make an impact in my community and I did help people.
That's it. That's beautiful. Young man, you have the last word.
In 50 years, it's a funny story. My mom always used to ask me a similar question. Where do you see yourself when you grow old? And I always said I want to see myself in a big house, and I'd want to be drinking hot chocolate with a book, reading by a fire. And I still hold true to that. I still want that for myself, because that's just what I've always wanted. And I hope that I can leave a legacy for my kids and posterity.
The positivity of youths. Thank you to our guest today, Rudy M. Becerra, former LNESC director and longtime friend and advocate for the program, as well as to our LNESC student participants from Puerto Rico, Texas, and New Mexico. Also, to the LNESC board of directors, the staff, and corporate sponsors, and to you for listening. Happy 50th anniversary to the LULAC National Education Service Centers, LNESC, for a half century of service to America's youth. Congratulations. I'm David Cruz.